So this piece is called Two Fools in the Field, Reporting to Fort Wayne, and it's Mike and Mark in the Desert. And we've done this a couple of times. Some of you from the IRCA 50th remember we did a short film on our experiences, but this year it was a whole new dimension. There's the desert site. That's our shack. Our plan was two decals. We were going to hook them up in broadside and record individually, and we did. We got many, many hours and hundreds of stations. A 1,000-foot bog went out. A 1,000-foot horizontal loop went up painfully. I will never build one of those. That was Mike's idea. The vertical was brought along so we could do some loading experiments as opposed to tuning a vertical with LNC. We just wanted to see if we could find a nice sweet spot where adding some inductance would give us just a generally better antenna without favoring things too much. And it did work.
We started by running what will become the bog first and ran that out with the transit about 1,000 feet. So we set stakes out to the northwest about 1,000 feet. And one here and then one right at the shack, one about 150 feet out and then one at the shack.
What's the shack?
This is the shack. It looks like it's a tent that's fallen over, but it's actually adjusted for solar ray protection.
All right, looks kind of empty right now, yeah. But we'll take care of that.
That'll fill up. So anyway, we started with this center line. We measured over to the 170 feet on each side where the CAS antennas will go. One you can probably see behind me, that's 140-foot CAS. The other one will go to the other side behind the camera. And those will also, the same posts or the same supports and the same stakes will be used for the U antenna and the super loop antenna. When we get into those will come up later this week.
So today?
Today, we're going to put up the second 140-foot CAS behind Mark, and we're going to compare it critically to the one that we put up yesterday to make sure that, A, the one that we did yesterday works the same as the one that we do today.
Well, we have five antennas up now. Might be able to see the horizontal loop. This is the corner of it, and you can see the feed point being fed by a ladder line. This goes out 1,000 feet in a diamond shape. Back over here, we have the DCAS number 2. And the latest addition to the family is this 30-foot vertical, which we're trying against a 1,000-foot bog, which begins down here in a matching box and heads out that way along the stakes. They surveyed this, if you can believe it, to get the lines right. Maybe a little overkill, but it's fun. Explain what we're doing here to keep our equipment going, will you, Mike?
This is a solar cell that is capable of about 3 amps, and we're feeding it into a deep cycle battery. And we've had really good luck with it. We've been operating a 100-watt ham rig off from it, off and on. We've been operating computers and charging batteries, cell phone batteries, and all that sort of thing for the last 2 days without recharging.
So we were going to run a U antenna and a super loop in the DCAS aperture. We had these 140-foot distances to deal with, but the U didn't work out because of the ground, and we ran out of time and energy to deploy the super loop. And the real reason we didn't worry about those last two was the DCAS broadside was the rock star. And that's where my chubby friend over here comes in. He is always willing to help you. Yeah, I've never met anybody that was so accessible, and that's very much appreciated.
Well, thank you.
So here are two quick experiences of mine that I wanted to share with you that really turned me on to this thing. Singular CX last June in Minnesota, in the middle of the non-DX season. I had a single DCAS antenna. That's the rear yard of my lake cabin. That antenna stays up all summer. My poor wife doesn't seem to mind. Down here you can see the null pot. That's 140 feet, and it's pointed, fortunately or unfortunately, at about 325 degrees. And as you can see, I don't have a lot of choice. I could maybe move 5 degrees or so. We wanted it reversible for one purpose only, and that was to rack up a list of stations that we could hear on the same channel on different sides of the antenna. So we ran this stuff, the left and the right, to a midway point here, and I used a Mark Conley-derived reversing system. So by flipping a switch, this end of the antenna became the hot end and that one the null, and by flipping the switch, it went the other way. The effect of it is, with a flip of a switch, you're copying stations in the 325-degree direction, and when you flip it the other way, it's whatever the reciprocal is. So look at this. All of these frequencies, when you flipped the antenna, just the flip of a switch, Jamestown became Cedar Rapids, Regina became Sioux City, Winnipeg became St. Joseph, Saskatoon became New Ulm, the Polka Station, Lisbon, North Dakota becomes WLS, and so forth. So there were many mornings last year when I'd get up at 4 and 5 o'clock and come out and fire it up, because he had me all inspired, to convince that it's going to happen. Every morning, same thing, the Canadians kind of owned the channels. And then came June 23rd and 25th of 2014. Between 5 and 6 in the morning, June 23rd and June 25th of last year, it was like a door opened. There were still a lot of the old guys, but all of a sudden, we are looking at a whole new world. And to give you some numbers, and some of these will, I don't want to spend a lot of time on this because so many of them are obvious, but look at 1230 and 1240 graveyards, 1340, and this was all done with a single DCAS. Note the absence of W calls. Yeah, there was a WGAG in Norfolk, Nebraska, I think, right? Wasn't that the one we saw there? That's probably the only W call on there. DAY was on there. The second experience was the one that's maybe a little more of interest to you because it's the one that we are going to end up talking a little bit more about. And that was the DCAS broadside experience, the polar pattern. What are we going to do about this? All right, if you can see that, okay.
These patterns are plotted with ESNEC to aim east, okay? And as you can see, the beam peak is kind of wide here at 530, and the green little dot is the beam peak that's aiming east. And behind that is the back null, which, you know, gets around at least 30 dB down, and also in practice as well as calculation. Now, as we see here, now we're at 1.1 megahertz, and we're starting to get a pretty effective-looking antenna. The beam width here, if I can read that, it's about 64 degrees. Still, look at how wide the back null is, okay? There's not much going to come in from behind this antenna. And if we look north-south or up and down on the plot, we're pretty close to the minus 20 dB line. So now we have it at 1,500. Now we have an incredible pattern. 52-degree beam width, great side nulls, and still, I mean, there's a little back lobe there, but that back lobe is 30 dB down. So this pattern is equivalent on AM to what we would get FM DXs or TV DXs would get with a good, you know, log Yagi type of antenna. And if I was going to put up an FM antenna pattern here like the APS-13, patterns are similar. This beam width might even be more narrow than that. So this is a supremely effective antenna at this frequency. Now we're up at 1,700 at the top of the band. Again, this is space 340 feet. And I put this plot in to show that the beam, main beam, becomes even more narrow. It's down to 47 degrees. However, now we are well past a half a wavelength spacing, and side lobes start creeping up. You can see those two side lobes, north and south, and they're approaching the 20 dB downline. In other words, I mean, we are limited by physics and geography, and the ideal spacing for two side-by-side antennas for an array is probably about 0.55 wavelengths.
Which would account for why we were out 340-some feet between, yeah, in the desert. He's definitely more into the theory of this. I just go out and try it, like most of us do. Here's the log for that one night that we were in the desert with the 340-foot broadside. A lot of them, for me, not being a denizen of the West anymore, were new signals.
For example, he's in the desert in eastern Utah, just over the border from Grand Junction, Colorado, and he found KCLX from Colfax, Washington on 1450. Again, this antenna was aimed northwest. I mean, that's, you know, pretty impressive catch. And there's similar stuff on Graveyarders that, if we look at all these logs.
And this is that same picture you saw earlier. But you just notice, other than Denver, KOA and KHOW, and K2 here, and I forget what this was, KWYO probably. Yeah. Everything's over on this side of the antenna. So that was a lot of fun. Now, this may or may not be relevant, but I wanted you to see, we are right about here with the antenna. And what's the station we're going to hear on 750? KOAL, right? What did we get? So, KERR came up, and there was nothing, well, I suppose way down KOAL. 1300, KLER, remember our antennas down here, we copied KKOL way up here, KLER and KAPL. Well, we could do this all day. Somebody asked about these were all with the broadside decas. When you say phased, you're really combining two elements.
This is not a phased antenna. This was not a phased antenna array. Both elements are combined in phase. There's 0 degrees phase difference between the two of them. The idea being not to steer the beam, but to make a more narrow beam. That has also, want to make a more narrow beam that has the same very good back nulls that we get from the termination resistance on the antenna, and also gets a more narrow beam, which gives you better side nulls as well. So the idea is to try to get a Yagi pattern on AM. And note that 340 feet by 140 feet. This fits inside a football field. Some of us have that kind of land available, okay, at home. Some of us don't, but... But most of us don't have 2,000 feet available for a good beverage.
You know, you want to borrow a desert? Come on out. you can't read that, but if you can remember Dernberger.com, I have a website that has a complete report on this antenna, and that's where the audio for the convention will be as well.
Okay, I guess it's my turn. We're going to talk first about some other types of antennas, okay? With the advent of the SDR, software-defined radio, people want antennas that can record, give good patterns so they can record the entire band. Of course, they also want very effective antennas at a single frequency. So for many people, you know, they get a chance to go to the expedition, or maybe you live and you've got a friend with a farm that you can use for, you know, one night of the year or something like that. And very, very effective antenna system is to use not only a single bog or beverage on the ground or long wire on the ground or whatever you want to call it, but to put two of them out somewhat different lengths and phase them. So I do that usually at my Wisconsin house, which is 20 miles north of Milwaukee along Lake Michigan shore. A couple of you guys have been there because I had the Milwaukee get-together there, you know, maybe a few years ago. Anyhow, this is we're going to play some audio here on 540. Take a look at Phil's shirt, okay? He has 540 ESPN Milwaukee, okay? So he must have known I was going to present this. No, coincidence. Actually, the guy's a genius. But anyhow, that station is located, you know, their transmitters in Jackson, which is just due west, maybe like 10 or 15 miles of where I am in Grafton, okay? This is with phase bogs aimed kind of like east-northeast, and my lengths were roughly about 665 feet, parallel about 485 feet. No termination, no cable, no transformer. The wires feed directly into a phasing unit, which then goes to my receiver. So let's play this audio.
Demain, jour pour le début de la nouvelle saison, en pleine forme et bien bronzé. Pas de midi sans info. Demain, 11h, arrêté midi 30. Ici, Radio-Canada, première. Pour le choc des idées, ici, Radio-Canada, première. En Gaspésie, île de la Madeleine.
This is this station is CBGA 1 in Grand Anse, New Brunswick. Anybody who speaks French would have, you know, I'm not fluent in French. I can understand it reasonably well. At the end of that, they gave the location as En Gaspé et Île Madeleine. That's what he said at the end of that before he went into this CBC sounder. Oh, CBF is long gone. This is last summer. This is last summer in August. So this is just to show how effective it is to throw couple of wires on the ground, you know, several hundred feet long, and phase them, because you do not have the local. There was no trace of it. Okay, so that is one thing, that simple thing people can do for a de-expedition. People worry about, you know, grounding and, you know, termination and stuff like that. That's for a permanent setup. So let's continue on. And now we want to use, you know, better antennas. And I'm not going to talk very much about a simple super loop or a simple single delta antenna. We want something that's got a better pattern than that. So this is a type of antenna that somebody could use who has tall trees in their backyard. And this is almost as good as a double CAS. And I guess somebody named this antenna the bow tie. And it's simply, you know, mast, I mean, whatever. You go 20-foot trees, 25-foot trees, maybe 100 feet between them, you know, and this works. And again, at the midpoint, the two wires cross. You feed it at one end in the middle, terminate it with a resistor at the other end in the middle. Very effective. But still, I mean, from tests I made empirically comparing the two antennas and also calculations I made, you know, again, the double CAS was the winner, which is why you're going to have a bunch of guys up here this weekend talking about using them, including the one that preceded me. What you have here is a typical configuration I use, which is 120 feet, and by about my masts are like 23 feet high. The bottom wire is a couple feet above the ground. And again, you've got two triangles. So think of a delta, and then think of it, they have to cross to feed the other delta. And think of another delta. Two deltas in series all connected. Everybody should have, who has the room, who lives anywhere in the north part of this country, especially north central and northeast, where we can have some severe auroral effects. Really handy to have an antenna aimed south. Number one, the aurora attenuates or knocks out completely northern skip. Then you want the antenna to enhance the south even more, and also to be directive to get rid of more stuff from the east-west. So we're going to play some audio here. This is on 1500. Sounds like all Greek to me.
Japanese Gillespie. Right on the field.
Okay, so this station is WPSO from Newport Richey, Florida, which is 250 watts on 1500. That gets out well. Well, again, the being on the west coast of Florida with the Gulf right there helps. But as you can see listening to that, I don't have any KSTP on that from the north or the northwest of me. That's clobbered in the null. And there was bits of a baseball game coming in there, but it was, you know, listening carefully, it turned out to be Cardinals game. So now here we have to listen very carefully on 1340 because I never had a Florida graveyard before or since. So everybody listen very carefully to this. Yeah, I mean, if you put headphones on, it's clear. The gal talking mentioned Tan Talk a couple of times initially, okay? And then the IDs at the end are for the three stations on the network, which are all in that part of Florida now. That was back in March when it was extremely auroral. And that's on my antenna AIM South. That's on a single DCAS, which, you know, has about 100-degree beam width, has side nulls about 10 dB. This is Illinois. Everything now is Illinois. I'm surprised I didn't have WJLL from Joliet interfering with ground wave there, but I guess the skip was stronger, you know. Okay, and now, so again, we want still, you know, nice to try to have something that works better than this. I want a more narrow beam, and also being able to steer the beam is useful too. But first of all, here's some work Mark did.
You asked me to put this up, Kaz. There's been some concern that these antennas, A, might drift in the null, or B, you can't really find a null that's effective across, let's say, two octaves or the medium wave band. So we went out and did some careful measuring to see just what the effect of the resistance was and how much variation we could give it. We did two tests. The first one we did for Bill Whitaker, and that is that we compared 150 feet of Cat 5 with 320 feet of Cat 5 on the receive side only, and we left a null pot on the null side. Bottom line is they're remarkably similar, and in fact, as you look at all these numbers, pretty much the same. So our conclusion is it really doesn't matter, at least out to this distance, and I'm sure farther. And I think, Bill, you've used 500 or 600, yeah, okay. Here's my null pot complete with vintage RCA knob to keep it insulated. There's a switch on the left. When you toggle it, those two little sockets on the bottom are switched to a voltmeter or a ohmmeter. So I can very quickly determine what the resistance setting is. And that's really useful when you're trying to gather this amount of data. First off, did you notice down there that I was thinking to myself 780, 781, whatever? I had to bug Kaz about that because that seemed about 100 ohms lower than one might expect. But he reminded me I was using number 16 wire. That made a huge difference right there. That has been consistent. And so what I did was I went in increments of 20 ohms fixed resistance across the end of the antenna, just to show you that if I'm supposed to be somewhere in here like you just saw, 781, 783. Look at this. Bottom line is there's quite a bit of variance you can accept. My antenna has sat out all summer. 783 ohms when I set it up. I get the same nulls on the key stations, which are all daytime checks, so you're not messing with SkyWave. WCCO is the best one. There's a couple right down the back end of the antenna that work well. And they're always the same, unless it's raining, and then it goes off a couple dB. So back to the inventor.
Okay, now we have a slide that actually looks good up there. Thanks, Bill, who was nice enough to draw this up for me. I wanted something that was better. And having a pretty good-sized field to the east of my house, I had room to make an array of two of these. Broadside and antenna terms mean side by side. If you hear the term end-fire for an array, that means end-to-end or in line. And again, the idea here is twofold. One, I wanted to steer the beam. Two, to steer the beam, main beam, somewhat, okay? Two, even though I'm aimed east-west, which is the way my property runs, I wanted to, you know, really be able to, with this year's auroral conditions, to be able to kind of steer a beam, you know, more southwest than west or west-southwest. Again, you know, trying to concentrate Kansas, Oklahoma, and Texas from northern Illinois. And, of course, now this is not reversible or switchable or anything like that. I simply use Wellbrook hardware, FLG100LN for the feed, which also transforms it and amplifies it. And I use an array controller box. Originally, I set it up, I was 270 feet apart between the antennas. 265 feet. That was about the extent of the size of my land to the east of my house. The problem with that is the southern element antenna, or the bottom one there, was only 20 feet from parallel power lines running down my street. Not only did that pick up more noise, it also was enough to distort the pattern. And again, so it made a mess out of that pattern. So I had kind of erratic results using the array. And I'm like, well, I got to do something different. So in December, before the ground froze, I decided to move that bottom element back into my yard, and knowing that I was going to space them closer together, result in a wider beam width, okay, not as an effective an antenna, but I didn't have a very effective antenna anyway, considering I had a big-time distorted pattern for being too close to the power line. So I settled on this. I settled on this, and I decided to stagger the elements a little bit. Next slide. So this is up at 1490, and you can see I got a six degree beam skew toward the southwest by staggering the two elements, having the northern one, you know, 40 feet in front of the southern one. So that, again, is kind of doing what I want. Here's an audio. This is audio on 1680 to show you what an array like this can do. Those were two Travelers information stations in Iowa. The Quad City one was dominant. Iowa City was behind it. That's on 1680 aiming west from me. So I'm aiming right at Iowa. Now, you'll notice that there was no WPRR from Michigan coming in from the back, which would be what I would get if I was listening, like on my truck or car radio at night. That's just clobbered by the termination resistors. And there was no Monroe, Louisiana to the south either, because that was in the side null, which was down about, at that frequency, about 20 dB. So that was knocked out as well. Again, that Wellbrook array controller is intended to control, you know, the Wellbrook phased array, which Bill Whitaker uses and which the late John Bryant presented about here. However, it can be used to control a broadside array as well. I'm using it as a combiner and a phaser. It has time delay phasing, which turns out to be about 50 degrees at 1,000 kilohertz, and that can be 75 degrees up at about 1490. Now, that's with the phasing in the other direction. it's aimed somewhat north of west. But see, look at how good that pattern is. Again, you've got beam widths around 70 degrees, and you've got almost an entire 150-degree region behind the antenna that's down at least 30 dB. So this should be a very effective antenna, especially, again, on the higher frequencies. Let's go back to 1490 and play some audio. This is on 1490. Listen carefully. KVWC in Vernon. You know where Vernon is? You got it, Vernon, Texas. That's from up north of Chicago. So you can see the kind of directivity possible. I don't get that. I don't get stuff like that all the time, but you can listen and stuff comes in. So that's Vernon, Texas, I think is out past Abilene, about where the panhandle starts to begin. So it's like 850 miles from me. On today's crowd, yeah, it was a record. On today's crowded graveyard, so that kind of shows what the directivity can do. Here's another one. Listen to the English. It's mixed with a Mexican station. Yep. You could hear him say K-A-N-I a couple times. That's in Wharton, Texas. Why was the audio mushy? Because the station is about 125 hertz high. Again, I'm showing the directivity in the array. The pattern's about the same, of course. That's a graveyarder I get kind of commonly on the array. That's 740 miles away in Garden City, Kansas. You may have heard him say at the start of that. You play it again, guys. Take another listen. Everybody very quiet. You'll hear him say Big Dog Sports. That's their slogan. Yes. Take my questions. That one's honestly reasonably common. Here's a pattern at 1 megahertz for my phased array. And as we can see, in comparison to 1490, my beam width is wider, and the beam is not steered nearly as much toward the southwest as at a higher frequency. That's because there's less phase to steer it. Now, ideally, I'd like to be wider than 214 feet, but I don't have the room. So as you saw when Mark showed his patterns, you know, he had a much nicer, more narrow beam in the middle of the band than I do. But still, this is a decent beam. The beam width's about 79 degrees. And again, you see a lot of the pattern. There's clearly more signal to the southwest than to the northwest. So here's a logging on 1060 that will also show you some of, you know, what an SDR can do, because this station is only 76 hertz high from 1060 nominal, but I was able to, you know, hear it very well. That's XERDO, which is a little on the high side of 1060. And that's from, across the border in South Texas in Reynosa. And you can see, I mean, where's KYW? They're in Philadelphia, but they certainly weren't coming in on my antenna system there. Probably Mexico City, probably not skipping in very well. And I'm using upper sideband to get away from 1060. You can hear there was some mushiness there. Now, a couple of months ago, I decided I wanted to try, listening a different the other direction. So I reversed my termination resistors and feeds and cables and everything manually. So now I have the array kind of steered. This pattern's on 1490, so it's high-end, kind of steered, you know, north-northeast. The idea being I want to look at, I have a tremendous null southeast and south and southwest. So what would I expect to hear on this? Well, there's not too many Canadian stations left, but, I mean, Toronto comes in great. Montreal comes in great. The new station in Montreal on 980 comes in sometimes. The Creole station in Montreal on 1410 can be heard sometimes. But, again, these patterns are very useful on the graveyarders. So here's one we got to listen very carefully to, and that's from, you know, WDNY in Dansville, which is in central New York. That was kind of hard to hear. Now take a look at my pattern and consider where, you know, Cincinnati is in relation to Chicago. And consider where Sao Tome is in relation to Chicago. Sao Tome is almost due east, or in a, off the side of the main beam, only a couple dB down, whereas Cincinnati is kind of southeast and in a pretty good null. Okay, but WCKY on Cincinnati, again, as people here in Fort Wayne area know, it's just a massive, massive pest. But I've been trying to hear what you're going to hear here at least 100, 150 times on whatever antenna systems, good, during good TA conditions, taking a portable and, you know, trying to null WCKY as much as possible across Voice of America's, you know, sign-on, which is at 10 p.m. in the summer, or 11 p.m. here in Indiana. So listen carefully. You'll hear Yankee Doodle. And then it will pause for a few seconds where presumably the guy's giving an identification. This is the Voice of America signing on. You can't hear that. And then you're going to hear Yankee Doodle stronger. So here we go.
The official home of the Bengals, Cincinnati's ESPN 1530. Sports Center Express. I'm Steve Lennox. Atlanta Hawks beat the new Brooklyn Nets in game 6, 111-87. Atlanta winning the series 4-2. Hawks moving on to face Washington in the second round. In Boston, Alex Rodriguez hits career home run number 666. Tying in with Willie Mays for the fourth on the all-time home run list. Yankees win the game 3-2. Stan, who caught the ball, would not negotiate a trade for the home run ball with the Yankees. Stanley Cup playoffs, second overtime in Montreal. Tampa Bay and Montreal all tied up.
So I had tried to hear Sao Tome many, many times, and there, finally, I got it. That's about going to conclude it for me, and again, I want to point out that the spacing I'm using here is 120 feet by 214 feet. Some people have space like that in their backyards, and, you know, that's all that's required to really get a very, very effective AM antenna system. And again, it's way more effective in the upper part of the band and in the lower part of the band. Lower part of the band, I would need, you know, ideally be about 400 feet apart. Few people have that room. So, and I want to close in saying that directivity delivers DX, as both of us have shown you.